At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome, everybody, to the Minimap Cast. This is minimap.com.au's weekly games podcast, your favorite weekly games podcast. My name is Kerry Palmer, and joining me, as always, is Jeremy Bratatich.
Hello.
Jeremy, hello. The energy levels, they're at an all-time low this evening.
Oh, only on your end.
Oh, yes. No, I wouldn't dare to comment or determine your energy levels without you. That would be very rude. But in terms of on my half of the podcast today, oh boy. Sam came home and I was eating my microwave meal because I was working until 6 and we start the show at 7. And I was sitting here just at my desk, just like slowly like putting my fork in my food and like bringing it up to my mouth. And Sam walked in. I'm like, hi. it's been nice warming up in the pre-show, but
you know what you should do for the like while you're doing the intro of the show,
star jumps.
No, I was going to say jogging on the spot.
Oh yeah, close enough.
Yeah, same thing almost. I think star jumps. Well,
while my microwave meal was microwaving, I did think of doing some push-ups and some crouches, which I try and do whenever the microwave's going, and I couldn't be bothered.
I enjoy a high knee every now and again. Just like up.
Oh yeah, they touch your hands.
Yeah.
Like in front of you. Yeah, that's a good one.
I think that one is the fastest way for me to suddenly feel energized between that and a extremely cold shower.
Have you ever pulled a muscle in your high knee?
No.
From doing high knees?
No. I did wonder where you were going with that, but
it's such a clever joke, Jeremy. It's such a clever joke. thank you, listeners, for tuning in. This is the Minimap Cast, minimap.com.au's weekly games podcast. Hey, guess what, everybody? It's finally the week that we're going to be talking about this topic that we've been kicking down the road for longer than I don't even remember, like something like 2 or 3 months. It's just been pipped at the post at every turn.
Yeah.
So the topic for this week is a bit of a hypothetical discussion, kind of silly one. It's a good one. It's the idea is it's an actor hot drop, I think is what we called the general kind of term on this.
Yeah,
but
if we just parachute a couple of actors that are not usually considered for video games or not usually thought of as actors who are in video games, we literally just like parachute them into some video games in various scenarios and just sort of see where we think that they should go.
Exactly. And today we're starting this off with what has been written down in our documents as the Breaking Boys.
Yeah, Breaking Boys. It's Aaron Paul and Bryan Cranston of Need for Speed and Godzilla fame.
Power Rangers fame.
Yeah. I like to imagine that we waited for like the actors' strike to finish before we started to do this, but it was more just like happenstance that happened.
Yeah, totally. It's a good point. We do stand in solidarity with all of the workers who are on strike though.
Well, like the strike's over now.
I know. So that's why I said we're on strike.
Oh, we're on strike. Gotcha.
Yeah. So, yeah, but before we do that, we'll talk a bit about the games we've been playing. But, yeah, it's weird not having a brand new game that we're reviewing or some megaton news. Like, we're talking about it before the show. It was like, we don't really have anything to say about the tweet about the Grand Theft Auto announcement that they announced. We'll hear more about Grand Theft Auto in December, and that's what was announced. So that's fun.
Probably at the Game Awards.
Probably. And or maybe just on their own, because that's what they did for GTA 5, and they're big enough they could just do that. They can just say something, and that will be the news day.
I think they did that for Red Dead as well. I think they just sort of dropped it one day.
Yeah,
like there was a countdown, and they just dropped it.
Yeah, for like 24 hours or something. Yeah. We're just going to talk about the games we've been playing this week, relevant games for the year, and then we'll get on to the Breaking Boys. So if you're not familiar with the podcast, we talk gaming stuff. We talk all things games, as well as fridges a lot of the time. We go live on all podcast platforms every Wednesday with 24 hours of early access given to all of our wonderful patrons. More on that in just a second. If you like what you're hearing, make sure to tell your friends, give the show a positive rating wherever you're listening to us. It makes a huge difference for the show to help get it in front of the eyes and ears of more people. And it only takes a few seconds of your time. If you want to get notified every time we release a new episode or we go live, make sure to follow us on social media. You can find us at MinimapAU on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and also Twitch, where we are live, as I just mentioned, every Monday night, except today, because today's Tuesday. So Tuesday night, 7:30 p.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time for the live recording of the Minimap cast. You can also go to Blue Sky, where the Minimap account is there under the same URL as our website, minimap.com.au. But yeah, if you're here with us in the live chat, we always hang out before and during and after, get Sam's commentary. Well, they helped us come up with that particular actor hot drop topic, but I think it was pitched as a wife swap topic. Wasn't this one?
No, that was a different one.
It was this one.
The other one that we were considering was like mixing and matching different studios and developers with different games.
Oh, you're right. That was the game version of Wife Swap. That's right. That's right.
I hate how attached that show has come to that consideration.
Yeah, you weren't really comfortable with it at the time, and it does not seem to have. You do not seem to become more comfortable with it.
Terrible show.
Oh, I know, Jeremy. I it's not an endorsement of the show in any means. Not happy. So, we also wanted to say thank you to Shook for letting us use the Moog Model D Improv as the music for the Minimap cast. You can listen to more of Shook's music at shook.bandcamp.com. And finally, Minimap is completely independent and funded almost entirely out of our own pockets. So, if you wanted to help keep the mics and lights on over here, you can support us by becoming one of our patrons. For only $5 a month, you get 24 hours of early access for all episodes of the Minimap cast, as well as extra bonus features we're cooking up and more. So you can head on over to patreon.com/minimapAU to help us out. And remember, it's cheaper than a latte with oat milk. I think it's also prudent to mention, stay tuned to our socials over the coming week. We have an announcement of sorts to make, or we will be involved with an announcement of sorts. We're talking about it before the show, Jeremy, and there hasn't been like a formal announcement. We were talking about like voices and a certain franchise. And
are we getting acquired? What is going on right now?
Well, it's not announced yet, is it?
Do I know about this?
Yeah, you know about this. We're talking about it before the show. Anyway, stay tuned to our socials. You and Jeremy both, apparently. Jeremy's going to find out there too.
I'll stay tuned to, I guess, what we're going to do.
Yeah, you'll stay tuned to what we're going to do. And he's trying to remember what we were talking about.
I'm so lost.
I'll tell you during the break. Okay. I'll tell you during the break.
Okay.
Stay tuned to our socials. We'll be something of an announcement of something happening in the coming weeks. What do you want to talk about first, Jeremy? You want to talk about Mario, or do you want to talk about Armored Core?
Let's talk about Armored Core.
Okay, is that because you need a minute to reset?
I so rarely get like so completely thrown, but I am right now.
I'll message it to you on Discord, so I'll put your mind at ease.
Yeah, all right. Just like you just messaged me you're being laid off.
Frank, I've had a bit of a chat with myself.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that thing.
Right. Oh, it's not explicitly minimap related. It's just the thing that
No, that's the thing. That's why I said it's something of an announcement for I spent more time trying to vaguely explain to you what it was than vaguely explain to them what it was. But yeah, it's not something to do with us. We'll talk about it. We'll promote it a bit. We'll talk about it next week on the podcast. But yeah, just keep an eye out for that one.
Goodness gracious.
Oh boy, let's talk about Armored Core 6 Fires of Rubicon, huh?
Yeah, I would.
It's been too long since I've said all of those words in a row.
There are a few things that I would like to do more than talk about Armored Core 6 The Fires of Rubicon.
Jeremy, have I got good news for you? Mm. Today, the only game I'm here to talk about is Armored Core 6 Fires of Rubicon.
Hell yeah.
Released by From Software in August of 2023. I played probably about half of this game,
mm-hmm.
maybe a little more than half because that third act is really long. Probably maybe a bit more than half of that this game when it came out, and I think I got flummoxed when Starfield came out. I think that sort of railroaded my time with it. I just got distracted from there. I probably dipped back into Tears of the Kingdom around that time, and then we got ready for PAX, and it just slipped away. But I booted it up. Probably about a week ago, and I beat the boss I was stuck on. Is that really innocuous one? You know how you take the wall in the first act, and then you go back to it not long after, but then in the third act you go back again after like the third like corp group has like taken it over again.
Yeah.
Except this time they've got some like proprietary defense mech involved, and that guy's really like surprisingly difficult.
Yeah.
Well, that guy was kicking my teeth in. That's where I stopped one time in August, and I didn't return for a while. So I came back and I beat him, but then this weekend I got stuck in. I did like an hour, and I
the Juggernaut, I believe, is the boss that you were stuck on.
I thought it was the HC.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. One of them. One of those ones that's just like surprisingly difficult. Seemingly innocuous.
Oh, the Juggernaut might be the first boss that you fight. At the wall.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah, no, that's the one where you meet Rusty.
Yes.
So, yeah, and I just started getting through more of it. And it's funny because I've been trying to keep like a grip on what the geopolitical situation is on the planet. Because like you're an independent mercenary and you're constantly being hired by the different corporations to help them achieve their tasks, and then they pay you, and then you go to the next job. And a lot of the time, you'll work for one group, and then the next mission will be working for the other group that you were just working against and delivered a defeat against to do something else. It's very fascinating in that way. Like when you take the wall from one group to the other, you then do like a survey, like a stealth survey for one of the other corporations in the area to like retrieve lost data from all the mechs that you just destroyed. Like that becomes your mission. It's a very interesting situation. And throughout the runtime, throughout the plot, I guess, of like through chapter 2 and chapter 3 and chapter 4, I thought I knew where the story was going, where it would be that like your handler who's giving you the missions would be like siding with one of the corporations at one point, or like is just trying to like make the corporations better so that they can become like a certain thing. And you've also got this like voice in your head who seems to be like a Rubiconian who can talk to you like through like brainwaves or something. And then it gets to the end of chapter 4, and they flip a lot of things on its head, and all of a sudden things become much clearer in terms of everything that's going on, who you're fighting for, what their objectives are, what your actions mean, what you've been supporting, what you've been doing this whole time. And it was such a fun twist. And it wasn't like a, this is no Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order situation, you know, this didn't flip the script.
No, this had an interesting story.
Yeah, shut up. But like it wasn't like a complete backflip, like, oh my fucking God, I never, but it was an interesting change in the pacing. It was a complete gear shift.
Yeah.
And it was in a way that subverted a lot of my expectations, minimal as they were, in a very pleasing way. It was a very fun turn. I haven't experienced the end of the game yet, and you don't get to do that many choices before that moment, and I'm just now at the point where I have to make some big choices. I was telling you today earlier, Jeremy, I got up to the point where it showed me the choices and I was like, it was like 11:30 last night. I'm like, nope. And I closed the game.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was really fun. But that's not necessarily why I'm talking about it today. I want to talk about the Ice Worm, which is the end of chapter boss for chapter 3.
Yep.
And it's a moment where all of the corporations come together to pool resources and create a strike force from all of the different companies, from Balaam, from Archibus, from the Vesper.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
The guy who's always calling you Gun 13 Raven, I don't remember who he's with, probably Balaam. But like, there's lots of different groups and they come together and
Dafang,
that's right. Yeah. And then there's also that you're coming together to deal with this ancient technology that's been resurrected by the Planetary Closure Administration. And they're keeping you all away from this secret area that's supposedly full of coral, which is the resource that everyone wants on this planet. And it's this big machine with drills in its head, but it's basically just this like hexagonal tube, but it's like the size of like many cities all stitched together. It's absolutely fucking ginormous.
Yeah.
And it digs its way. It's like a sandworm, except it's a mechanical worm that digs through ice, and it pops up out of the ground and it shoots missiles and it digs back in. And if it gets you in its mouth, then you're pretty close to dead immediately. And so you're all jumping around and you've got this proprietary like stun laser that you've got to hit in its face to break its first layer of shield. And then, so you've got three members of your team around you as well. So there's four of you on the ground dealing with it. And of course they all fuck off, because that's what your allies do in this game. Whenever you get halfway through a boss fight and you have help, they're like, sorry, I got to go. Yeah. Happens every time. So yeah. Annoying. But then there's a fifth member of your team, Rusty, who I was talking about before, who's great. Rusty's great.
Rusty is so good. I love Rusty.
He's one of the only characters in this game that you like interact with outside of like comm chatter.
Yeah, like you've got like an actual like rapport with him, and like he's like not friends, but like you're friendly.
He respects you.
Yeah, yeah.
Like outwardly, and then he's quite good at the things he does in the missions he's a part of. So you grow to respect him.
Yeah,
and so he's
your buddy.
He's a part of this. Yeah, he's great. He works for one of the corpos, but whatever. He's still good. He works for one of the corporations, and he's part of this strike team. But he's not on the ground with you. He's manning a railgun, and that railgun is like past the horizon. It's so far away you can't even pretend to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you break this first layer of shield on the Ice Worm's face, that gives Rusty the signal to get ready to prime the railgun, and it starts charging. And on the horizon, in the sky, it just starts to glow like the sun's rising. Mm. And it's not. It's gloomy. It's overcast. It's like dust.
Snowy.
The sun is not rising.
Yeah.
Like, it looks like snow above you and snow below you. Like, it's just gray and white and dusty, and there's no color. Except over there, it looks like the sun's rising, except it's not the sun. It's the fucking, like, intercontinental railgun that Rusty's manning. And he's charging, and he's charging, and the music swells, and the Ice Worm jumps up out of the ground to pounce upon your team, and the music cuts out. And Rusty says, I won't miss. And the railgun goes, whoa! And all of a sudden, the sky is pierced with color as this ancient machine is struck by this gigantic railgun from across the other side of the planet. And all of a sudden, it erupts in a burst of color as it pierces through its coral armor. And the sky is ablaze in red and orange and blues, and it tumbles to the ground, and then you lay into it as hard as you can. with the rest of your allies. Oh man, it's such a cool moment. And it happens three times in that fight. And it's, and then most of the time you die because you're learning the fight. And so you have to do it all over again. And it never gets tired.
Yeah.
It never gets old.
Yeah. I think I spoke about this scene specifically in vague terms when we spoke about it. And it is just one of the like coolest things. Like, it's just such a great like set piece. It is exciting. It's really quite active because like it doesn't happen unless you like set all those things in motion. And
it's quite rare that you see all those other mechs helping you as well. Like normally you only have like one teammate with you at any time.
And you're all
fucking around on the ground trying not to get hit and trying to get your shots in.
You also have to remember like how big you really are, because you like it's hard to forget the scale and size of everything. And then when you sort of look down and see that you're like, you know, just like knocking over like street lamps and stuff.
Yeah.
And then you look at the size of this fucking like giant behemoth that you are fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And then you consider the size of the railgun that is on like the other side of the fucking planet that is firing at this thing. It is just so cool. They fuck with scale so much in this game, and it is it is always to its benefit.
There's a moment in chapter 5 that I got up to last night that was I won't go into the story and the bits of it there, but there's a moment.
Yep.
After you defend an area for 5 minutes and it allows the thing to happen, and the thing happens, and I'm like,
yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. This game's pretty fucking sick. Like the whole ice worm fight is like such a highlight for moments for me this year.
Yeah, 100%. Like I've got a couple of moments like that for me from Ghost Runner.
Yeah,
and it gets close to, it starts nipping at Armored Core's heels, honestly. Like it gets in there.
Yeah, right.
But Armored Core sits at a baseline level of cool.
Yeah.
At all times.
Yes.
That like Ghost Runner doesn't quite. So Ghost Runner hits those peaks where it gets above that baseline of Armored Core. But then Armored Core's moments, incredible moments, like the Sea Spider or Baltaeus or the Strider in the first chapter. Even like so many moments in just the first chapter.
Yeah.
Or like you said, even just how they casually constantly fuck with scale. Even just the effects of the color of your boosters across this gray and pallid landscape. Or the color of the coral, all the cutscenes, the effects of even just the vibes of Walter over the comms, or Rusty talking to you, or talking about the mercs, or what is it that Carla always calls you, tourist, and Chatty, they always call you tourist. Like there's Armored Core's baseline level is cool is so high, and it constantly elevates it over and over and over again. It's fantastic.
I think it's also fascinating how much characterization and character moments you get from all of these people in this world, considering that you'd never see them, like never see their face, their person. There's no video call where you see them. There's no like little, FaceTime dial in a fight or whatever. You don't see them when you're like at base calling each other to plan missions and stuff. You only know them from the mechs.
From the mechs and their logos.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Which is
because everyone's got their own logo, which is also cool.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Everyone's got their own call sign. They've all got their own logo, and they've all got like really awesome like flavor text about like where they came from, why they got into this, what it took for them to get here. I find it so fascinating that like Rusty is so explicitly cool as like a character, as a character in a game full of like cool things, and yet we have no clue what he looks like. You just know him by what his mech looks like.
Yeah.
Which is this sharp and sleek Viper mech or Vesper mech.
Yeah.
It's fucking, it's so cool.
I also end of chapter four boss is also really, really strong. Not just literally, but also in terms of a cool moment in the game. What is it? The Ibis Sea Weapon, which is this very. It contrasts to almost every mech you come across up until that point. Like, it's another armored core, but it's curved. It's a very sleek sort of futuristic model of AC that you don't see in the game nearly at all up until that point. And it's full of all of this coral technology that's very impressive and very hard to dodge.
Yeah, yeah.
It definitely felt like the next Baltaeus moment. Like, there have been lots of little moments along the way, lots of little hurdles, but they always felt quite doable. This one, while it felt doable because I was, you know, 20 hours into the game, it was like, oh,
yeah,
here's the next hurdle. This is the next skill check. Like, I Baltaeus is so relatively early, well, like 2 hours into the game, 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah.
And then this one, here I am, like 15 hours in or something like that. And it really took me to task. You know, it didn't take me longer than a day to get to, but that mission really took me to task. And then, it was such a great payoff to beat that boss with like 200 health left or something like that, which is not much when you start with 10,000. Yeah. And then all the cutscenes start to happen and you get that story payoff I was alluding to before. Man, what a cool game. I really hope to finish it this week.
Yeah, you've got like a small but still larger than you expect chunk left.
Yeah, I know I've got like all of Act 5. I don't know if it's going to be like Act 4 was, which was pretty... Act 2 and Act 4 are pretty concise.
Yeah, no, it's sort of in the middle. Like it's not too short, not too long, but like you've got a little bit to go because you've got
a handful of missions.
Well, you've got a lot of story to wrap up is the thing. And
I feel like I'm getting all of the story in this chapter.
Yeah, no. There's still a bit. But it's
no. That's what I mean. I'm like in this chapter that I'm up to. I feel like I'm about to get the vast majority of the story in this chapter.
You're sort of getting the part of it. It's fascinating because like there are some games right where you sort of get like a lot of story over like in this actually this is not just games, it's like movies and shows and stuff as well, where it's like when you think about a show, you often think about if it's a show you've finished. Like the final couple seasons usually, because usually like they sort of build towards this big thing and then that's sort of like the end of it. But you don't often remember that, like, you know, there was a handful of seasons where this is not at all what the show was about, you know, like, like we'll talk about it later, but like Breaking Bad, I think is one of those, and Better Call Saul, where like, you know, it's about these specific key moments, you know, like Gus building the beginning of his, you know, whole meth empire. But like you don't see him for like the first two seasons of the show barely. Yeah. In both of those shows, exactly. But then you can't think about Breaking Bad without Gus. You can't think about even Better Call Saul without Gus.
Or Breaking Bad without Saul.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of like things that like a lot of movies and stuff and shows do that. And I think that this game kind of does that a little bit as well, where it's like the first couple like chapters of the game, they kind of blur together a little bit. Because I have trouble remembering what happens in the second chapter. But once things sort of kick off in like the end of the third into the fourth and fifth chapters, like that's what I sort of remember the most.
Yeah, chapter two is when Walter's like, I gotta go deal with some things, and you start doing stuff with Air, or however you say that, which is going into RAD's territory and making your way across the landscape with that gigantic freight cannon.
Yeah, and you also, like, you then, that's when you start to get to know the other factions as well.
Yeah, and that's when you meet Carla, and
Oh, Carla's so cool.
Carla's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to it. And like you and I said, you asked what decision I was going to make today because I told you I was up to that choice. And I was like, I'm thinking this one, but also I'm very keen to see what the other choice is like. And I'm pretty sure the like two choices that's been in the game prior to this really don't make that much of a difference in the long run. Like it's really felt like they don't do much necessarily. Like, I still feel like I get to this focal decision point, whether I'd make those other choices differently or not. But this is a key decision. This is like pick a side, basically, that I'm up to now. yeah, I'm very excited to see it, and then to go through it again with my arsenal of weapons and my knowledge and my expertise, and to make the other choice and see what happens.
Are you familiar with what the new game plus for this game is?
I know that things change. I know that something gets recontextualized, something changes. I'm not off. That's about as much as I know, though.
Okay.
Do you know from playing, or do you know from doing?
I know
from hearing.
I know from reading. Yeah.
Yeah.
And talking to other people about it. I think it's a really cool and interesting what they do.
Mm. Do you become 622?
No, yeah, it just becomes Dark Souls, weirdly enough. Like, it just turns into that, which I thought was a strange decision, but, like, you know. That's...
You end up in Lordran.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Godric's there, and the...
You've actually built an Orlando.
Yeah, like, but it's weird, because, like, Sekiro was there, and so was, so was German.
Yep, Gascoigne's not a werewolf yet.
The doll.
I'm very excited to play more of that this week and to finish it. There was one part, and I'll wrap this up quickly though. But there was one part I was thinking of, which is, why did I fall off and why haven't I gone back? Why has it taken me this long to go back to Armored Core? And I was thinking that as I was going through all these levels, and I'm like, man, this is so fun. It's so cool. I like it so much. Why did I fall off? Because I remember feeling a bit like, it's good. It's good. It's great. But having moments of like, I don't know. And then I got to this like skill check. I got to this end of chapter 4 fight, and I died and I died and I died, and I started feeling frustrated. I'm like, that's the reason. That's the reason why, because my patience isn't tuned in for Armored Core Trial and Error, because I like this game when it's challenging and I apply myself, but when I kind of get through it. And so when I hit the challenge, it's like, it's fine. It's okay. I do get through it, but it does dampen my mood a little bit. I do get a little bit like, well, so that's been interesting to reflect on. But anyway, that's enough about Armored Core. We're definitely going to be talking about it come December, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Jeremy.
Gary.
Talk to me about Mario Wonder.
I beat Mario Wonder.
You beat it.
I beat it.
How much did you have left this last week?
About a world and a half. But I was taking it pretty cruisy. I'd sort of like just do a little bit here and there, and then play a mission or two on my lunch break and stuff like that. Nice. Yeah, this game is really good.
Yeah.
I went through all the worlds. They all felt unique. They all felt exciting. I think that the lava world is perhaps a little bit long, but overall it's very good. I got 100 of the Wonder Seeds, which is not all of them.
Okay.
But that was about where I got to when I finished it. I don't know. I don't exactly know how many Wonder Seeds there are, but when you beat the game, it's like, they give you a little like indicator being like, hey, like now that you've beaten the game and you're sort of just doing it on like, you know, completionist mode at this point, we're going to like give you like an idea of like how many missions are available in the other worlds that you haven't beaten.
Right.
And I thought I was quite thorough.
Right.
And I was like, oh, well, like I've beaten the main game. I'll just like jump in and see how many I can sort of like quickly finish before I go to sleep.
Yeah.
And I opened up. And I was like, oh, I missed a lot. Turns out there's a lot of missions here that I did not know were there.
Yeah,
and
wow.
Like, I'm like looking at a world and being like, where are these? Where are they? I didn't expect to be so 75 to 80% of my way through the level.
Yeah,
I thought I was closer to like 95 or something.
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah.
How many of the special world levels did you do along the way?
So I'm up to what I believe is the last one, but I don't have enough of the special world Wonder Seeds to unlock the final one. Because
right, so that means it can't be the last one then, because you need to do the other ones to get those seeds.
Sorry. So like I've got, I think about maybe two or three, I think. There's more than I thought is the thing. Like, it's also hard to tell because, like, I can't, like, look at the map and see. I can only sort of see where I can go. I think about two or three.
Okay. I think there's six of the ones that you, like, I think there's six. There's one on each of the worlds.
I think
I'm
there's,
pretty sure.
I there might be more than that.
Okay, right. But that's still like six plus.
Yes. Yeah. So once you hit a certain amount of the special wonder seeds, or secret wonder seeds, whatever they are,
you can open that one in the middle, right? That level in the center.
Yeah, but that one in the middle then sends you up the next level, and there's even more up there that you need to find.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. So it's more than just the ones you can see there. There's more on top of that.
Yeah, that's intense. Yeah. How many of them unlock when you finish the game, or are they all there before you get to the end?
Sorry, what do you mean?
Like, do you know if, like, you beat the game and then levels unlock?
I've not seen that.
Like, post-game stuff?
I don't think that's post-game stuff. I think it's just, like, you now have all the seeds.
More game stuff.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, no, this game is very good. This is a very good video game. I think it's very fascinating that, like, and like we've spoken about this a little bit, but, like, I think it's very fascinating that they have returned to a 2D Mario at the end of the Nintendo Switch when they began it with a 3D Mario, like one of the greats, and then they've ended with one of the best 2D Marios. It's extraordinarily impressive. I ended up turning off the online component only because I wanted the challenge.
Totally. I felt the same.
But I think now that I've finished the game, aside from this, like the really hard world, I think I'm going to turn it back on and just sort of like enjoy how silly and fun and like funny the online component actually is.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of really, like, I've seen a lot of really good moments coming out of that from social media and from friends and stuff, and like telling stories about like, oh, like I friend of the show Ollie showed me a video today on his Switch where he had two other people standing on the end of a ledge with him, and the third, the fourth player, third that isn't him, was like continuously jumping off the side of the edge but wasn't able to like make it up yet. And so they were just like sliding on the edge and then jumping and then doing a spin and then trying to slowly gain height. And the other three were just like sort of crouching, just watching.
Yeah.
Until he eventually made his way onto the top and then made it on top of the platform. And then everybody spammed like happy face on the thing.
Yeah.
And they were just before the end of the level as well. So all of them finished the level at the same time.
Oh, that's so cool.
It was so cool. And it's, I didn't expect that from a Mario game of all of all places. Like that, like fundamentally, in my mind, it's a single player thing. Like they're just single player games, but that is definitely like a Souls kind of online moment almost, which is just hilarious that is happening in there.
Yeah, it's so weird.
Yeah,
it's really quite strange.
It is, and it's, and I think I hope that sticks around. I think it's a really great way to assist other people without, like, because it's kind of a middle ground in between, you know, just straight hard Mario and like the assist mode characters, which are kind of like very easy mode. There's not a whole lot of like wiggle room in between the two, but this kind of feels like that almost in a way. There's like a help you out, but you can't rely on it, which is fascinating. The last level is really quite good. It's very, very creative, and such a victory lap, as Mario games I feel often do. It's such a victory lap for like, hey, how good is this game? Kind of,
yeah.
Like, what if we just show you a lot of the things you've done condensed and remind you like how much fun you had through this whole game.
Yeah.
I hope they never stop doing that. Because it's great. And it's also like, it was one of my favorite parts of Mario Odyssey was going through like Dark Side of the Moon and then Darker Side of the Moon. Just like so good.
Yeah. That's one of my fondest memories with Odyssey was, the post game.
Yeah.
Moon, Dark Side and Darker Side
Yeah.
challenges.
Yeah, because they were hard. Like they were
hard.
They required some serious dominance over the controls.
And a lot of determination. I know a number of our friends who got up to it and put a lot of time into it and just didn't complete it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's good to hear that it's like that for this one as well.
Yeah.
Have you had many moments of intense difficulty or real challenges? I mean, some of those secret levels are pretty nuts, like that music block one that I think everyone spoke about on social media.
Yeah, I think that was probably the hardest level for me. I haven't finished the secret world, so like I haven't done the last level in there yet.
Yeah.
But that was probably the hardest one that I've done so far, was that original musical one. Like I left and came back to it.
Yeah.
Which is the only time I've ever done that in one of these. A lot of the time when I die in games, like in this game, is I'm like, it's often me being greedy. It's like I'm just gonna like,
I can get that coin.
Well, like that, or like I'm gonna hold down a run because I'm just fucking running and I don't want to slow down. And so yeah. I'm then making the jumps way harder for myself. And when they work, I feel like, you know, I like elation. But like oftentimes I fuck it up, and then I'm like, but I also want to get the purple coin. And
did you ever use the stamp? It's one of the like rainbowy foil ones at the end. It's like the automatically run at like 150% speed at all times.
No, I didn't find that one.
That's an early one I've got it, and it's so uncontrollable. I've never used it since doing the challenge that gave it to me. But that sounds like that could be right up your alley, because it's such a complete fuck around with the controls.
A lot of those foil kind of shiny stamps are so not good. Like, not useful. There's one which is auto jump. Like, you are hopping forever.
I think I found that one recently, yeah.
And it's like, it's not good to use.
No.
And then I've sort of forgot about it because I never used it. And then towards the end of the game, they give you the like challenge mode version of that level with that one. And it was pretty tricky. It's like dumb hard.
Yeah. That reminds me of in Galaxy, they've got that Spring Mario power up, which never felt good, because you get a lot of air with each bounce. It's like boing, whoop, boing, and it's and to like turn around is to like, it's this whole like circular like come back around to it kind of motion. So I'm not surprised to hear that. It's cool that it's in there though, and they're like, fuck it, equip it if you want, do whatever you want.
There's
definitely going to be YouTube videos about that.
There was one that I got towards the end, which was a stamp where when you run off a ledge, you continue running for a little bit further than what you expect, like maybe like five blocks.
Five blocks, okay.
Yeah, like a fair chunk, and then you can jump.
It's a bit of coyote time.
Yeah. And then they give you a level that is based around that, and it felt so wrong. Like, it felt so wrong to purposely run off and then jump much later to make it. Was I had to override my brain for every jump in that level because I was just so used to jumping at the perfect time as opposed to jumping well after I was meant to.
Yeah, totally.
It's quite cool. It's quite cool. I don't know if I'll I don't think I'm gonna 100% it. I think it's probably like it'd take too much time for me to do, and I want to start getting to other stuff.
Now, is that because you don't want to do like the flagpoles and the coins in every level, or you don't want to do all the levels?
I don't have much of an interest I've no interest in flagpole hunting. I have nearly no interest in the purple coin hunting. I think that's
if you see them, you'll get them, and if you miss them, then whatever.
Yeah, like I will go out of my way to get them, but I won't. If I reach the end of a level and realize I've missed one, I won't go back for it.
Totally.
But I would like to hopefully, like, I want to finish the secret world, I think, and then I'll probably just call it there. Maybe get all the badges, and that's probably about it.
Yeah.
There's too much in this year for me, 200% Super Mario Brothers Wonder.
Yeah, you gotta do that second playthrough of Armored Core.
Yeah, I thought about that, and I'm like, I don't think I'm going to be able to do that before the end of the year.
No,
I've got two Alan Wake games to finish.
Two Alan Wake games and Spider-Man and...
Nah, Spider-Man's gone for me.
For the year?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I thought you were going to maybe get to it for December.
No. Oh, maybe we haven't spoken about this. Yeah, no, I've just written off that game. I'm like, I'm not playing this before the end of the year.
Maybe you don't ever go back.
No, I'll probably go back because it's still fun. And I think about playing that game a bit, being like, oh, I wouldn't mind actually just spending a couple hours here and there. But I've got too many other games that I think are more important for me to play leading into Game of the Year than a game I know is definitely not going to be in my top five.
Yeah, I think I'm trying to think of what I want to prioritize before the end of the year, and I need to finish Tears of the Kingdom before the end of the year.
Yeah, that's one of mine.
And I want to finish Alan Wake 2 because I think I'll be about halfway through it.
Yeah, also one of mine.
But I think just thinking about that now and thinking about how it's not blowing my socks off like it has for a lot of other people, I'm coming around to the thought of maybe it's time I really make sure I put in the time to get the Separate Ways DLC done for this year. Because I think I might enjoy that more than Alan Wake 2.
What Separate Ways?
Resident Evil 4's DLCs.
Oh. That's not that long though, is it?
No, it's 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, I forget about it.
I have a potential counterpoint for you.
Okay.
You put more time into Baldur's Gate 3.
I have been doing that.
Oh, cool.
I've been playing with Sam. We're like 13, 14 hours into our co-op save because we're playing together. It's pretty slow.
Yeah.
But it's fun. It's fine. It's happy.
I was talking to one of my coworkers today and I was like, what have you been playing? And he was like, oh yeah, just like mostly just Baldur's Gate 3. I'm playing it. Like I'm only playing it with my partner.
Mm.
But he's like, I think we're coming close to the end of it now. And I was like, how many hours have you put in? He's like, about 150.
Fucking hell.
And like, again, it's slower with co-op.
Yeah.
But I was like, that's 300 collective hours.
Yeah, totally.
He's like, totally. Oh, my
God. Yeah, that game's co-op is so cool. It's so robust.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I love that you could just
it's start so natural up as well.
And just go wherever you want. Yeah. Like, it does really feel like you're both just playing the game together separately.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's very, very good. Well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll be talking about Breaking Boys in the game hot drop for the Breaking Boys. Hey, we'll be right back, everyone. Welcome back to the Minimap Cast. I realized as I threw to the break there that saying Breaking Boys with no context is a very strange thing to say, so I just wanted to make sure I addressed that at the start of the break. I've been hanging on to that for like 30 minutes because I said it, and I immediately put my head in my hands. But we're talking about the boys from Breaking Bad is what we are about to talk about. We also spoke about so many things like synthesizers.
Mm.
And I've got my saxophone here. I've got my saxophone out on stream. I didn't play it because it doesn't really work over Discord. It was a good break. Yeah. And now we're here to talk about the Breaking Bad boys. We were going to do Saul, but we backpedaled on that.
Yeah, I think I want to have it a little bit more condensed for now.
Mm. And that way we could do the Better Call boys, which could be Saul and Lalo.
Saul and Lalo. We could. I think I would want to do like Bob Odenkirk and Rhea Seehorn together. I think.
Rhea Seehorn. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. But
I think you say her name is Ray.
Oh, is it Ray? Right.
I think so. I might be wrong. Or Rhea. I can't remember. It's hard. It's got there's an H in there. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that's not what we're talking about today. We're talking about Bryan Cranston and Aaron Paul.
Yeah.
Now, Jeremy, the prompt is taking the actors and putting them in a game.
Yes.
Not the characters.
No.
Right. Now, the reason I say this is because the first thing I thought of when I tried to come up with an answer to this question was a role for Walter White in a game.
Okay.
And
was that God of War?
No, it wasn't God of War. It was Tekken. I couldn't get the image of Walter White in Tekken out of my head, grappling in like alternate costume variations where it's like him without pants in his like old man tidy whiteys.
That's so funny.
Like grabbing people by the belt and like throwing them around, throwing the like the thing that he explodes in Tuco's face at people as like a projectile attack. And I don't know, like I just
he's got the image
of this like bumbling man, but with the malice of Heisenberg, with no physical acumen, doing an okay job in a fighting game.
Yeah, his close up of he's got like the shard of the plate that breaks off.
In the first season.
Yeah.
Another projectile could be the gigantic family pizza.
the magnet. The giant electromagnet on the side on that they used.
Oh, in the truck in season 5, God, I forgot about that. I'm thinking of like fatalities for some reason, which is not really like, you know, putting someone in a barrel. That's Mortal Kombat.
That scene with the magnet, just really quick aside, is maybe the most fantasy part of the entire show. It's so silly.
And it's such a clear point. We're clearly going to diverge into talking about the show through this, and that's
a bit, yeah.
And but that scene, because it's the first episode of season 5, and it's such a clear indication of the difference in direction that happens as a part of that season. Like season 5, they were like, "Look, are we going to do one? Are we not? Are we going to do it? I don't know. Okay, we are going to do it. It's going to be two halves of a season. It's a bit longer, but." They cover so much ground in that final season. Every episode's very dense. And that first episode where they're like, "Oh, we won. It's all fine. And Gus is dead and it's fine. Oh, no, they stole hard drives and we can't do anything about it because they're an evidence lockup. We need to wipe them with an electromagnet that's strong enough that it wipes them on the other side of the wall." You're right. It is the most fantasy thing of the whole series. It's such a clear divergence in tone for the entire series.
Yeah.
And it's marked very clearly from the first episode of that season with that stunt. It's so bizarre.
Yeah. It should have realistically been season 5. And then the final part of season 5 should have been season 6 or something. Cause they feel so different. That final chunk.
Yeah. Yeah. It stops being quite, almost meditative in its pacing in the way that like seasons 1, 2, 3, and 4 are.
Yeah.
And it becomes a fucking roller coaster. It goes so fast.
Yeah.
And they do a good job to do that and preserve the tone of the show through that, but it is very different.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's one of your answers, Jeremy? I assume they don't involve Walter White in Tekken.
No. So my first one, which is like, it was like a really easy one to start to sort of get my brain going in that direction. The first one that I wrote down was just like, Bryan Cranston as Mario and Aaron Paul as Luigi. just like they sort of similar like age gap kind of.
I consider them as having like a 2-year age gap, Mario and Luigi.
Yeah, but I think so in the live action film from the 90s, like it feels like it's about 10 years.
Yeah, like he's a much younger Luigi, isn't he?
Yeah, he's like in his early 20s, and I think like Bob Hoskins probably close to his 40s.
Yeah.
If not later. That sort of version of Mario and Luigi, the much older brother, much younger brother version, I think could be quite funny. Mm. I think that, you know, obviously Brian looks pretty good with a mustache. I think Aaron probably could as well. Also like mm-hmm. similar statured, like, you know, like Aaron is a bit thinner. What they could put, like give Brian a bit more weight, a bit more of a rotund, a rotund Italian plumber man. That's basically, I didn't really have a whole lot to go off on that one, but I thought that would be an easy one, at least to get my brain going in that direction.
Yeah, for sure. That's a good Kickstarter.
Yeah, hearing either of them say Wahoo, I think would be really weird and interesting as well.
I feel like I can't see them doing those roles unironically.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it'd be like watching an SNL skit.
It feels a little bit like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's one of yours?
So I thought for Bryan Cranston, and this is what I thought you thought of for Bryan Cranston.
You said it.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, I think I know what I don't know. Like, I think the one that I picked is something that it sounded like you had picked as well. I don't know. We started vibing off of each other there, and you were like, I think I know what you picked, but it's not what I actually picked, but I see why you thought I picked that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So for Bryan Cranston, I thought he would fit really well as part of the supporting cast members in Wolfenstein.
Oh, this is not at all where I was going.
Oh, excellent. It's I feel like he would do really good as like, there's like a wacky older scientist. It's like the, yeah, who manages all of the random tech they keep unearthing.
Set.
They free him from the prison in the first game, and he's in the ship the whole time in the second one. I reckon he would do that role really well because Brian's got excellent comedy chops.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
Like terrific comedy chops. He's got so much range, and I think he would take that role and run it. He would elevate that role as much as he could.
Yeah.
Having
a monkey with a cat head or whatever.
Yeah, happened. Exactly. Yeah. And caring a lot about and running around the lab and.
So is that just for Brian? Is that Aaron? All right. So you weren't going to say Aaron Paul is
BJ Blazkowicz. No, but that's not bad.
I don't think that's good.
It's not a neat fit, but it's not bad.
No. See, okay, so now I'm going to share what I thought that you thought the one that I thought it was.
Yeah.
Which was Brian as Sully and Aaron as Nate.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Right. That did cross my mind, both of them, independently.
Yeah, yeah.
But it neither of them really fit.
Yeah, I didn't immediately go like that's like a slam dunk. No. But like I think
Sully's not dramatic enough or comedic enough, I feel like, to really make the proper use of Bryan Cranston.
I think that he's
a good middle ground.
Yeah, like I think that he's a little bit too is a little bit too dorky almost.
Yeah, but also very sarcastic and a little snarky at times.
Yeah, yeah. Like Sully is like an ex-James Bond. Like, you know, like 25 years ago, he was like the hottest guy imaginable. Whereas Brian, like, is not that kind of like type character, actor.
Yeah, I see that. I'm sure he could play that role fine.
Oh, totally.
It just looking at it, yeah, it's not a neat fit. Neither is Aaron as Drake, I don't think.
No, but what I did have, which I think is a really good fit, I think, is I think you could actually do a version of V and Johnny Silverhands, which V was Aaron Paul, and Johnny Silverhands is Bryan Cranston. I think that there's a way that works.
Yeah, right.
Because Brian can play menacing.
Menacing, but also like contemplative and poetic. And
yeah, yeah. I reckon that there's a bit of meat for him to chew on that with that role.
Yeah, that's really good. He wouldn't have like Keanu almost has like a drawl with Johnny Silverhand that I think really lends itself well to the like the cynicism that like oozes out of his character at all times.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I'm sure Brian could get there with something, but like, yes. I really like that pull because I think that's a great pick for Aaron.
Yeah, totally. Right, like he could fit that kind of like, you know, a bit in the dumps, kind of trying to make his way up in gangs and underbelly.
He's
kind
rough.
Of. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. But also he's like he's got it. His soft moments. Yeah, and yeah. I don't know that we're saying all of that. It does sound a lot like Jesse, but without the like dumbfounded teenage kid who can't get off weed. Angle as well.
Yeah, like I think it's like a more immediately likable Jesse.
Yeah. It
took me a bit to try and get away from Jesse while trying to cast Aaron.
Totally.
I've got one a little later, but we'll get there. Yeah. What's your next one?
Well, it's funny because I thought of a role for Walter White, I also then just went and picked one for Jesse.
Yeah.
And I realize I actually kind of delineated, Because I haven't really seen Aaron Paul in much else that isn't Breaking Bad. And I realized I kind of delineated Jesse and Aaron when I tried to do these thoughts as like young Jesse, like season one, season two Jesse, where he's really young and like energetic and like goofy a lot and quite naive compared to El Camino Jesse.
Sure.
And that being sort of my reference of like what Aaron Paul could do when not just being Jesse, even though that was Jesse, but it's a very different Jesse. Like it's, you know, it's weird, but that's kind of how that balanced out in my head.
Mm.
But for Jesse, I thought for really young Jesse, who's a bit kind of loopy and he's doing drugs, but sometimes he's not and he cares about things, but also he's like a gangster and he's like peddling drugs. Like he has no idea what he's doing with his life and he's quite smart, but he never had the means to, or the to apply that to anything that wasn't like street stuff.
Yeah.
I think he would do really well as a stranger's mission from GTA when you're driving down the side of the road and someone just shouts at you and you pull over and you get roped into a 10 or 15 minute mission, or even just you sit there for a monologue of him. And like, I think the thing that could work so well with that is he wouldn't need to be in the middle of a crisis or in the middle of like a come down off of like a 3 day like cocaine vendor or whatever. Like he could just be himself and be the focus of one of those missions where you come across someone who's so bizarre. And he would work perfectly in that scenario, I think.
I did have a similar thought off of that, which was like similar like structure. But for me, I think I kind of want to see both of them almost more in the Red Dead Redemption world.
Because
I think they could both be pretty cool cowboys.
Yeah. Part of Dutch's gang.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Brian being a Dutch type figure, like the idea of him being like the guy trying to like keep everybody together, but is
with that bit of charisma.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, yep. Yeah. And maybe like I didn't immediately want to put Jesse in the John Marsden type character, but I wanted to put in maybe someone who is sort of like a specialist kind of guy. Maybe even like Micah, even some guy that like has got a bit of trouble to him, but like
one of the younger guys.
Yeah, but give him a little bit of villain in him. Like make him more of an immediate villain than Brian.
Oh, that's fun. Like Malice.
Yeah. Make him kind of a scumbag.
Yeah.
And see where you can sort of take that.
Oh, I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he could handle that really well.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
This is a dumb one. Aaron Paul as Cloud and Bryan Cranston as Sephiroth. they've got a lot of monologuing to do.
Old Sephiroth. Sephiroth is very smooth.
Yes.
And Bryan Cranston is becoming wrinklier by the day.
But the idea of Sephiroth saying things like, you know, fucking those who look with clouded eyes see nothing but shadows. You know, give him some really high
7 seconds till the end.
Yeah, give him some really fucking intense godly shit to say.
Yeah, really esoteric, completely divorced from reality.
That which lies ahead does not yet exist. Our world will become a part of it one day, but I will not end, nor will I have you end. You know, like, just get fucking nuts with it.
Mm-hmm, 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 mm-hmm.
And Aaron forever just going like, huh? Like, I'm not a soldier anymore. I don't care. I don't know any clout.
Yeah, like, where's my money?
Yeah.
Yep. It's hard because they're also anime in that game. They're also like dull smooth. Every single character in that game,
and
that except I guess Don Corneo.
You can have fucking Wedge be
oh fucking Badger.
I forgot about that.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Because those who aren't aware, in Final Fantasy VII Remake, the voice actor for Wedge in the game is played by the person who plays Badger in Breaking Bad.
Yep.
Oh, that's so funny. This is my last one here. So I just had like one for each of them, their characters from Breaking Bad and the actors. Mm-hmm. So this is my last one. But for Aaron Paul, which is basically just El Camino Jesse, kind of gruff but also clumsy, but also just dealing with it and just pushing ahead anyway. And he's got ideas, but it's kind of by the skin of his teeth. I was thinking for a game, and I actually thought, I don't know if I'd want this as like performance capture, like facial capture, like his likeness in this role, mm-hmm. but at least the acting, and at least for this type of role, I think he could do really well as Wolverine.
Interesting.
You know what I mean? And again, that and it's taking those sort of actions that you see in El Camino and sort of like translating that into a role. And I think a bumbling, competent yet bumbling mutant who is very violent and just trying to get his own way, not in like a oh, I want to be rich kind of way, but in like a I want to get away from it all. I want people to leave me alone kind of a thing. I just want to escape. Like I see that. Really, yeah. Like one-to-one in those actions in that role.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if he, like, I can't look at Aaron Paul with his likeness and see Wolverine,
no.
Which is why I say maybe not his likeness, but like sticking his performance, I reckon he could pull off a Wolverine voice and a Wolverine characterization pretty well. And sticking his performance into that kind of a situation.
Wolverine is very gruff, though.
He is very gruff, but he can be gruff, and I think his voice is his voice is older than I think we give it credit for, because we think of like younger Jesse a lot when I think of Aaron Paul. But I think these days he's not there. I think he can run at that gruff if he wants to. It wouldn't be like comics Wolverine. It wouldn't be like, hey bub, well, like all of that, like cigar smoking, like constantly there but doesn't want to be there but he's always there. Like it wouldn't be that version of Wolverine, I don't think. It'd be a more modern solitary take on the character that I see playing out.
Just bouncing off that, I think it may be that there's a world where he could be a Daredevil like because he's got the sensitivity to him. And I think he could be like, you know, the not quite smooth talking, but at least convincing, genuine lawyer in the courtroom, but also the vigilante man without fear at night as well. That I would
like. He could go as hard as Daredevil needs to,
yeah,
and
yeah.
run as like surface level as Matt Murdock needs to,
yeah.
Does he have the playboy charm of blind Matt Murdock, lawyer?
I think that he's not explicitly a playboy.
No, Matt Murdock. But he's a player.
It kinda.
Like he's a lot of the time, like he kinda is just getting with a lot of people, you know?
Yeah. I think when you cast someone as hot as Charlie Cox, that comes with a certain level of just raw sex appeal.
Yeah, right.
It kind of just writes itself into the show.
You're right.
Because
you saw that happen in She-Hulk. He's in it yeah. for 30 minutes and immediately paired off.
Yeah. Because like in my mind, like he's always got two loves, Matt, which is Karen, and
God.
God.
sorry. No, sorry.
God. No, it's always Karen and it's always Elektra.
Yes, yes. And is that like a Matt thing and a Daredevil thing or
yeah.
Yeah.
Look, he slept around. All the Avengers have slept around. Like Hawkeye for a long time was famously like a shitty playboy.
Yep.
And then the movies came along and made him a family guy for some fucking reason. but yeah, like I think that could have worked.
Alex in the chat has a good one, which says Walter White is Cooking Mama or is in Cooking Mama.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's cooking, because let's cook. I could see Aaron also as a Star Lord type as well. I guess just to round off on Marvel.
Oh yeah, and Guardians.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Perhaps. No, that would work well, especially thinking of was it Chris? No, it was Eidos who did Guardians for Square.
Yeah.
And all of their characters shout a lot. He'd play well into that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Oh my God, they all did shout a lot. The last couple that I've got. Bryan Cranston as Snake, and Aaron Paul as Raiden.
Oh my God! Wow,
which kind of works a little bit.
Kind of, yeah.
Just a little bit. Just their voices, obviously, but like,
see, that's so funny because I'm going in.
Oh no! All right, here we go. Strap in.
Because Bryan Cranston's too old for Snake in my head, and Aaron Paul's too young for. No, he's too old for Raiden. So what I would do in my head now is actually more something like, Aaron Paul as Solid Snake and Bryan Cranston as Big Boss, which is the original version of Snake from like the 70s.
Right.
Because Solid Snake is the clone who was younger, but then he ages a lot. But so then they end up both the same age. So I don't know. They don't interact until they're both very old. So like it doesn't make any sense. But
I was thinking more Raiden from Revengeance.
Oh, Cyborg Raiden.
Yeah, and I was also thinking whatever version of Snake.
He's very angry.
Yeah, yeah. And whatever version of Snake from Metal Gear Solid 5.
Yeah, that's bit. So that's Big Boss, yeah. but young
like,
Big
yeah,
Boss.
Young, yeah. Because yeah. like he's like Brian and Kiefer Sutherland have some similarities.
Okay.
Just like in their like tone and voice and the level.
Okay. Yeah.
So like I could have seen that game not be Kiefer, but actually be Cranston.
Yeah, totally. Cranston could also do a good Ocelot, I reckon, with the, is he, cause he gets a bit older and like the longer hair, a bit grizzlier. And also when he gets taken over by Liquid Snake, he has a lot of monologuing and he could handle those just absolutely nonsensical monologues.
I also kind of thought, what if Aaron Paul as Metal Gear Solid 3 Ocelot?
Yeah.
Like the young,
really young,
dickhead.
Really naive.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then you can get Rhea Seahorn as big as boss in that at the end.
Oh, as boss. Yeah. 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 That's not a bad pull, actually. That's really not a bad pull. Oh man.
I had
did that come up because we were talking about Snake from Simpsons and then Snake Plissken?
No, it didn't.
No, okay.
This is another more of a dumb one, but Aaron Paul as Leon and Bryan Cranston as Wesker.
Yeah, Wesker. Yeah. That's really good, actually.
It's so stupid.
I love that.
It's so silly. Or even Chris. You could have him as Chris Redfield.
Yeah, you could have him as Resi 8 Chris.
Yes, yeah, giant, huge Chris Redfield.
Giant, huge, operative, doesn't tell anyone anything, is a jerk Chris.
Yeah.
That would be awesome. God, Chris is such a dickhead in those games.
I know. I love how in that game, Heisenberg calls Chris... boulder puncher or something because of the fucking Resident Evil 5 thing.
Yeah.
Oh
God, that's funny.
I only have one more, and this is just an Aaron Paul one. I'm sure you could throw Brian in here in some fashion, but Aaron Paul as a infamous type character.
Oh, yeah, as a Cole.
Yeah, like Cole or like you know, even Desmond?
They made a new what's his name? Delson
Rowe.
Yeah.
Like a you know young-ish guy, even though, like, I think Aaron Paul at this point is now, like, 40 years old.
Yeah, he is.
He doesn't look it. He doesn't look it. Yeah, like, he could be a rogue. He's good as a rogue type.
Aaron Paul is 44.
There you go. How old's Brian? Like, 60?
I think he's about 65. Yeah. Hang on. People also search for... Oh, really? He's 67.
Yeah.
He looks great for 67.
I really want Aaron Paul to be Ghost Rider.
Ghost Rider, yeah!
Like in the movies or whenever they eventually introduce Ghost Rider.
That would be awesome.
Either him or Keanu. But if
Keanu is Ghost Rider, I think Keanu's pushing it. He's pushing 60.
Yeah, but he's still got it.
He is, but I don't know that he's got it for that much longer. Like, he'll have it for as long as he can, but I don't know how much longer he's got it.
The other casting I wouldn't mind for Johnny Blaze is Norman Reedus.
Norman Reedus. Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
I've never seen him in anything. Because I haven't watched Walking Dead, and I haven't played Death Stranding, and that's all I know him from.
Yeah, right. There you go.
What's his range like? Because he always seems like he broods.
He is quite brooding. I think that works for Johnny. Honestly, like, I think that works for Johnny Blaze. It works enough. Like he's an ex-stunt guy that has, you know, been fucked over by the devil a million times.
Right.
Okay. Like, he's a bit jaded. So
Keanu is 59 years old.
Yeah.
He was born in Lebanon.
There you go. Yeah, those are our breaking boy picks.
Those are our breaking boys. That was good. That was very fun.
Are there any other quick ones you got off the dome?
I barely got those four out, so definitely not. I was very impressed with the, like, dozen ideas you had. But yeah, this did not come quickly or easily to me. So I was just glad I got what I got.
I'm just going to have a one final cheeky look at all the art books that I've got next to me in case anything else really stands out.
Yeah, Bryan Cranston is Ratchet and Aaron Paul is Clank.
I did think about what if you had fucking Jack and Baxter.
Yeah, except I would have Aaron Paul as Jack and Bryan Cranston as Baxter.
Yeah, I think that's probably about it. Like, unless you wanted to have, like, Aaron Paul as, like, Guardian and Bryan Cranston as Ghost in Destiny.
Guardian and Ghost?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Some of the most charismatic characters in all of games.
You could put them both in a Dragon Age or in a Mass Effect. Oh, in a
fantasy setting.
Well, no, like in a BioWare thing, I reckon.
Or in an RPG setting.
Yeah, right. they could thrive there.
Yeah, yeah, they could. Famously, Martin Sheen was in a lot of Mass Effect 2 and 3. Bryan Cranston could easily do a role like that.
Like, I think Brian's in the same position now as like he could be the lead famous actor in a Bethesda RPG, right? He could be the
like Liam Neeson was.
Yeah, like Liam Neeson or Patrick Stewart in Oblivion, right? Like, you know, have like your leading actor who's had a tremendous amount of experience, is a known voice. You give him a massive role.
Would you put either of them thinking along the lines of Gus Fring? Mm-hmm. Would you put either of them in the role of a villain in a Far Cry game?
Like, yeah, I think the thing is that, like, I don't really care about Far Cry villains that much.
No, neither do I. So it's also funny because Michael Mando and
that's right.
Who plays Gus? What's his? I can't remember Gus's names.
He's Giancarlo Esposito.
Yeah, Giancarlo. They've both now been the villains.
Yes,
probably some of the better villains in Far Cry.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that is hilarious in that, in just thinking about that.
Yeah.
Because around the same time as well was when also Jonathan Banks, who played Mike was in Batman Arkham Knight as
Jim, yeah, but as only Jim, Arkham Knight.
Only Arkham Knight, yes, but as Jim Gordon.
Yeah.
And he did quite a good job, I thought, as well.
Yeah, he did a good job.
He sounded like Mike the entire time, but like it was quite good.
It works well for Gordon.
Yeah. It was also weird that they recast him in the way that they did. Just like seemingly for the third game, they're like, what if we went bigger and got rid of the person that gave Gordon a bit of depth previously, but that's kind of like replacing David Hayter with Kiefer Sutherland, in the final game, huh?
Sam in the chat is alluding to Death Stranding. One is the guy who carries giant packs across terrain, and the other one is the baby.
baby Bryan Cranston.
Yeah. He'd just be able to channel his time as Zordon in the Power Rangers movie, and I think that'd be a pretty good a face in a tank.
Yeah.
Easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Easy done. And then they get to play against Mads Mikkelsen.
Exactly.
Oh man, this is silly and fun. I like this.
Yeah. I don't want him to be a Far Cry villain, but I would like them maybe give him a just cause. Give him like a forever shouting over the radio through an entire town dictator.
Yeah. Like over the top.
Like well over the top.
Completely pulpy.
Yeah, yeah. Like
I reckon Brian can handle that.
Yeah.
Aaron probably could. I just haven't seen him in that role.
Yeah, I've not seen him as like unhinged.
Yeah, and like a complete parody of something. Yeah. No, that would be very fun. Yeah, and I think you're right in like a BioWare or a Bethesda role, but I would love to see them as a monologuing villain who you see and hear a lot in that capacity. Not like Spacey in Advanced Warfare where you see him for like 40 minutes total, you know, like a lot.
Brian could be up there with one of the best voiced elites from Halo. Could you imagine
the Arbiter?
Well, but another one like an Arbiter. Like the
Shipmaster.
Yeah, something like that, right? Could you imagine the conversation between an Arbiter and an elite that is voiced by Brian and just the dulcet tones between Keith David and Bryan Cranston going back and forth talking about, like, impending war?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Or even give Brian the Gravemind.
He would kill the Gravemind. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I was thinking as well that this role would actually probably be a bit of a waste for him, but just like in terms of age, he'd be the right fit for like Lord Hood.
Yeah.
But that would be a complete waste on Bryan Cranston because that guy has absolutely zero charisma or just anything interesting to say. He's a walking military man.
Well, he's there to feed Chief the cool lines.
Well, but even more than that, he's there to receive Chief's cool lines and to say permission granted with authority, and like that's kind of it.
Yeah, but like Master Chief, do you mind telling me what you're doing on that ship? You know, like stuff like that. Like he's there to be. Yeah,
you see what I mean though. That's not the cool line. The cool line is finishing this fight. That follows that.
Yeah.
He's there for Chief to say something cool too.
Yeah, yeah, he's there to just be the other side of whatever Chief is going to do.
Like, yeah, with some sense of authority.
Yeah, whereas, like, Commander Keyes in the first one, the Miranda's dad, he's at least got a bit more to do. Like,
yeah, he's got to fuck it up and release the Flood.
Yeah, but, like, you know, he's got lines that I remember. You know, like, he's actually got some moments that I think about.
Mm.
And then he dies.
Mm. Is Miranda in the first game? She's not, is she?
I don't think so. Oh,
because
no. She doesn't.
Chief's the only one who gets off the ring.
No. She's in the first one because like she's there when Papa Keyes dies and she's like screaming for it. Like she's like, Dad. Like I remember. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. I'm remembering now. And her voice acting's pretty uneven in the first game, isn't it?
Most of the voice acting in the first game is pretty uneven.
Yeah. I remember not being very impressed with hers.
Yeah. There's yeah.
It's like very 2000.
Aside from the fucking like the Oracle, like, and I guess Chief, like,
and Chief,
there's and okay, and Cortana, like, there's like none of the people.
Yeah, so there's some, and then the rest are like, yeah.
And Johnson, actually, okay, maybe we're being too harsh, but like some of it, it's a bit, it's
like a 50-50.
It's pretty corny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. I want Johnson as well.
Yeah.
Well.
There you go.
Any other humdingers, Jeremy, or are we tapped out on these breaking boys?
No, I think that's about it.
Yeah, I reckon so. That was fun though. That was good. I liked how much you had to plumb from those depths. That's good. If I can come to this with a couple for each of them, then I feel like I'll be treading water alongside you. But you ran with that one. You had plenty of ammo for that.
Yeah, like Sephiroth and Cloud.
Now I really just want to see Bryan Cranston in like a Sephiroth outfit, like a cosplay, but like no makeup on, like just him in like a Sephiroth outfit.
Yeah,
that would be very funny. All right, everyone. Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of the show. I have no idea how long we've been running because I forgot to start the timer on the second and a half of the show, but that's fine. I don't think it was too long.
No, I think we're almost about on time, I think.
Yeah, nice. Awesome. Everyone, thanks for getting to the end of the show with us. Thanks for listening. Thanks for spending your time with us. If you've got any picks for Aaron Paul and Bryan Cranston in a gaming property, let us know.
And let them know.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, if you've got the ear of Vince Gilligan, see if you can get their number and let them know to listen to this episode. Don't do that.
Vince, no. Vince, you're welcome on the show anytime you want. We would love...
Not you, Brian, not you, Aaron, but Vince, anytime.
Yeah. Like, we'll think about the rest of you, but like, Vince, you're welcome on whenever you want. We'd love to have you on.
Yep. I don't think I'm smart enough to have a conversation with Vince Gilligan.
Have you heard him speak? Like, have you heard?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Yeah.
He's got a quite high-pitched kind of nasally southern drawl, doesn't he?
He's also, like, he's way more, like, chill than I ever expected.
Oh, yeah, no, totally. He's, for someone who makes some of the most intense media, like, of the last decades, yeah.
I've seen a lot of clips of directors' commentaries for the shows, and... he just seems to be laughing at the dumb stuff they got away with, like in a perfectly good way.
And it's funny too when you think about the tone of the first season of Breaking Bad. Like, I love the tone of season one of Breaking Bad because it's so serious, but it's all about them muddling their way through all of those encounters. It's all about them like failing upwards,
yeah,
like despite themselves. It's so good, but it's also very serious. Ah, man. I don't know. He's got a good sense of humor.
Yeah.
Like the pizza thing. Like that was like scripted, you know? Like it had to be that way because it's completely completely ridiculous.
Well, the pizza staying on the roof was unscripted.
No, I don't know. I don't think it was it?
I thought he went to throw it and it wasn't meant to stay up there. Because I think
he thought it was meant to throw the box. And the box was meant to go up on the roof, but it was meant to like come out. And then the pizza came out in like a normal flat disc and just went and stayed there.
Yeah, maybe. Something like that. But whatever it was, I remember...
the plan was to get it up on the roof.
Like, yes. But like, I think what happened was that... yeah, that's right. And whatever ended up happening, the pizza staying on the roof, that at that point, Brian improvised his like double look up there and then his sort of like walk away of like, I can't believe that just happened.
Yeah.
In the post show, Kerry, I'll show you a very funny video of the people who are living in that house now.
Oh,
because
they fucked that house up in that final season.
Yeah, the people who are living in that house now are like fucking bonkers and like are like forever furious and angry and will yell at anybody that like looks at their house. And will like scream and swear, and they have like giant fences, and like it is like you are living in a famous house. Like if you are this unhappy, you should probably not be living there because
you should probably sell it for $2 million and go find somewhere else better to live.
Like if you are walking past that house and you slow down, they're like, "Hey, why the fuck are you?" I'll show you a video. It's like I can't believe it. Level. Like,
all right,
this is just dumb.
All right, everyone. Well, that's something to look forward to. If you're watching live, stick around for the post show. If you're not watching live, you can find that post show on our Patreon by supporting us. It's just $5 at patreon.com/minimapau. Gets you 24 hours of early access for all episodes of the Minimap cast, as well as other benefits like seeing our post show archives. They go up there. Where you'll see us watch those clips of those very angry people who live in a famous house. If you want to follow us, make sure you keep up with our socials, like, for instance, maybe later this week. To keep ahead of that, you can find the Minimap social accounts at MinimapAU. You can also follow us individually. Jeremy, where can they follow you?
At ObiWanJez and Jeremy at minimap.com.au on Blue Sky.
You can follow me at KJ Palmer on Blue Sky. And then on Twitter, you just add _24, KJ Palmer _24 for Twitter. And yeah, for everything else Minimap related, you can find all of that on minimap.com.au, including our other podcasts, our other written articles, like our previews from PAX, some reviews we've done recently. It's all up on the site. Yeah, that's about it for us, everyone. Thanks so much for listening. Again, let us know your picks if you've got any. And until next week, have a good one.